Welcome to the Royal College of Physicians Edinburgh Clinical Conversations podcast. Each episode within this podcast series, we delve into a different medical topic with an expert speaker to join us. If you want to find more about the Royal College, then please do head over to the RCPE website and have a look at the education stream and see if membership would work for you. It offers a host of educational updates and activities such as the evening medical updates, the Royal College Symposia, and many more. Please don't forget, if you listen to our podcast, to give us a rating on one of the podcast platforms or subscribe so that it can come directly into your podcast stream.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Clinical Conversations brought to you by the Royal College of Physicians of Edinburgh Trainee and Members Committee. My name is Marilena Giannudi and I am the current co-chair on the committee, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Vidya Nair, who is a consultant geriatrician at Leeds Teaching Hospitals and also the clinical lead for orthogeriatrics. Vidya, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me.
This podcast today, we'll be focusing on orthogeriatrics from a medical point of view and what we should be thinking about when we see these patients on the ward. So do you mind by perhaps starting telling us what orthogeriatrics actually is?
Yeah, a good place to start. So I guess the approach for orthogeriatricians is that it's a multidisciplinary approach to the management of frail and often complex patients who are presenting with a fragility fracture. And it's really to ensure that they receive appropriate and timely intervention to allow the best possible outcomes. We know that the number of fragility fractures are increasing within the UK population, and that's as the population ages, we know that the prevalence of osteoporosis is increasing. And osteoporosis in itself is often asymptomatic and it's often undiagnosed, but it becomes clinically significant when it results in a fragility fracture.
So I guess the next question that I should ask based on that answer is, what is a fragility fracture? How can we recognise that when we're seeing patients in A&E?
Fragility fractures are defined as low trauma fractures, often sustained from a fall from standing height or less. I think the figures are that it's approximately 1 in 2 women in the UK and 1 in 5 men are going to sustain at least one or more fragility fractures during their lifetime. And the common sites of fragility fractures are your vertebral bodies, hip, wrist, proximal humerus, and pelvis. And obviously, we know that the number of fragility fractures are increasing year on year, but it also has a significant impact upon the person themselves. Fragility fractures can result in disability, and there's also financial costs to the NHS. I think in 2019, it was accounting for over £5 billion, which is about 2% of the overall healthcare spending. So it does have a significant impact upon the person and also the NHS as well. Hip fractures are the commonest type of fragility fracture. And in terms of identifying patients, it can be quite challenging in an older person because older people may not present with an obvious mechanism of injury, the so-called stealth trauma. And a typical example of this would be Sir Bobby Charlton, who passed away last year. So he had a fall onto a carpeted floor in his care home and was initially checked over, felt not to have any injuries, but then was admitted to hospital with multiple rib fractures, developed a pneumonia and died 5 days later. So it's having that, I guess, awareness that it can be quite challenging to identify fragility fractures in the older person.
So if we're worried about a patient having sustained a fragility fracture, other than, I suspect, an X-ray, what other investigations should we be doing for these patients?
Obviously, X-rays in the first instance, but also thinking about a CT scan to look for any other signs of injuries, so not just bony injuries, but other types of injuries that can be associated with a fall. That's obviously getting to major trauma territory in terms of the number of injuries and the severity of those injuries. But it's just having a low threshold to suspect someone may have sustained an injury as a result of a low impact fall.
And I know that you mentioned that you work very closely with the whole MDT in managing these patients. Do you tend to see these patients before they have their operation, if they're in hospital on the orthopaedic ward, or does your care start in optimizing them after their operation?
We're involved throughout the patient's stay, so that's the pre-op and post-op care. We work closely with the surgeons, the anaesthetists, the nursing staff, and the other health professionals on the ward. In terms of what we do for our pre-op patients, and hip fracture patients make up the majority of the fragility fractures that we see, in terms of what we do pre-op, the medical care that we provide is really trying to identify and optimize any medical conditions, to undertake medication reviews, and we try to predict any outcomes that may happen, for example, post-op, and try to put preventative measures in place to reduce the risk of those complications. And it's also important to have discussions about ceilings of care, because often the patients we are seeing are very frail, and it's to try and manage expectations and have those conversations with the patient themselves and relatives. And in terms of the post-op involvement, it's helping to oversee the post-op rehab by being involved in daily MDTs with the staff on the ward. It's also undertaking a falls assessment. So part of our role is to find out how did the person come to fall, what's their risk of a future fall, and to try and reduce that risk. And also to think about their bone health assessment. So the majority of patients we are seeing, the fracture is as a result of a fragility fracture, so an osteoporotic fracture. So it's going ahead and assessing their bone health and determining whether we need to start osteoporosis treatment in hospital or whether we refer to our fracture liaison service colleagues to have further assessment of their bone health and treatment.
A couple more questions come to mind based on that. The first one is, you mentioned that most of these patients will be frail. Now, for avid listeners of the podcast, you may remember that there is another podcast that we did on frailty assessments in the elderly population. And if not, I will put that on the footnotes of this episode so that you can refer back to it. In that podcast, we discussed the different frailty scores that you can use when assessing patients. Is there a specific one that you use within this population, or can you use anyone to define frailty?
So that's one of the challenges in the older surgical patient, because often when you've had surgery, if you look at the risks of complications between a younger and older person, the surgical complication is very similar, but it's the medical complication rate that's a lot higher in the older person. And that's as a result of altered physiological reserve, increased number of comorbidities, and frailty. And frailty, you've obviously discussed it in previous podcasts, but it's that loss of biological reserve and failure of physiology, which makes the person more vulnerable to any stresses placed upon their body, such as a fracture or major surgery. And we know that frailty is increasingly recognized in the perioperative patient. We know that frailty increases the risk of complications, length of stay, loss of independence, and mortality following surgery. So it's really important that we do identify frailty, and we use the Rockwood Clinical Frailty Scale. Obviously, we are dealing with patients who need emergency surgery. If you've broken your hip, you should have surgery to fix your hip. It does act as the best form of pain relief and to try and get you mobilized. So we're dealing with patients along the emergency pathway. So in terms of why bother assessing frailty for those patients if it's not going to change perhaps the outcome, well, it's all about shared decision making, and also helps to focus your mind in terms of screening for those perioperative complications that frailer patients are going to be at increased risk of. And that would be delirium, hospital-acquired deconditioning. And it also helps to identify perhaps any complex discharge issues, which we can predict based on their frailty on admission.
The other question that I had from your previous answer was that relating to bone health. Now, I know osteoporosis is also managed by the endocrinologists, and I don't want this podcast to be all about osteoporosis, but just from a very basic junior doctor on the ward point of view, what investigation should we be doing to see if someone has osteoporosis and raise those red flags that this patient needs bone health treatment?
Osteoporosis isn't diagnosed from blood tests. So for a definition of osteoporosis, it's based on the bone mineral density. So if we take hip fracture patients, we know the majority, if you're over 75, you're likely to have osteoporosis. And the guidance now is really to offer treatment for osteoporosis as an inpatient based on the assumption they already have osteoporosis. So we do certain screening tests. That's what we do in Leeds. We check everyone's calcium, vitamin D, And based on that, we may give extra vitamin D before giving treatment as an inpatient, such as intravenous bisphosphonate when someone sustained a hip fracture. And that's because we know that when you've had a hip fracture, the risk of you having another fracture is highest within the next couple of years. So the idea is you've obviously had surgery to treat your broken hip, but if we can offer secondary prevention, we're trying to reduce the risk of a further major fracture, which may require hospitalization. So we check calcium, vitamin D. For appropriate patients, we will give inpatient intravenous bisphosphonate treatment and refer on to our FLS service so that they'll have a yearly infusion if appropriate. For patients who are younger, who require more evaluation and risk assessments to assess their bones, we will refer to the fracture liaison service and they will organise a DEXA scan and further treatment if appropriate. But the DEXA scan will tell you if a person has osteoporosis or not based on the bone mineral density. But the DEXA scan doesn't give any indication whether you should offer treatment for osteoporosis. So we can use something called the FRAC score, which is a web-based algorithm, which predicts the 10-year probability of someone sustaining a major osteoporotic fracture. And that's linked with the National Osteoporosis Guidance, which will then give you information as to whether someone meets the intervention threshold.
What is the role of physio in the patients that you see? And at what point do you say that physio can continue in hospital, or actually we need to consider a rehabilitation bed for these patients?
We know having early mobilization after surgery is really important in improving muscle function and also reducing the risk of complications such as developing pneumonia and pressure ulcers. So having a daily physio 7 days post-hip fracture surgery is crucial in terms of rehab. So there should be rehab goals agreed with the patient and the therapist. And obviously, everyone is individual as well. Hip fracture patients are often the frailest of the frail. So it's also setting expectations in terms of what goals need to be achieved. In terms of when we say someone is ready to leave hospital, that depends on how they are from a medical perspective to ensure they don't have any active medical issues, and also working in collaboration with our MDT colleagues, so the occupational therapists, physiotherapists, to see whether they need further rehab. And if that's the case, moving them to a rehab unit is a better alternative than being in an acute hospital, so they can have a continued period of rehabilitation to act as a stepping stone to going home. Or if patients are doing really well, we can try and get them home directly with ongoing rehab in the community.
The first 7 days post-surgery are the most important.
Yes, and it's ensuring that they have daily mobilisation on a day-to-day basis. And there's a lot of guidance around this. So we have something called the best practice tariff, which is a financial incentive. It was set up in 2010 by the Department of Health in order to provide gold standard care for anyone who presented initially with a hip fracture. Now it's been expanded to anyone with a femoral fracture who's 60 years and above. Various standards that need to be achieved. So you have to have surgery within 36 hours, be seen by an orthogeriatrician within 72 hours, who will do your falls and bone health assessment, but also be seen by physiotherapy, either on the day of surgery or the day after surgery. And we know that evidence shows that if you have early mobilization and it's consistent, it helps reduce your length of stay and it's a better outcome for the patient.
Can I just ask what a falls assessment comprises of when you do that in those patients?
So falls assessment, once again, is a multidisciplinary approach. So it's really important that we obviously speak to the person themselves, get collateral information to find out the circumstances around the fall. Often falls are unwitnessed, so that's why getting a collateral is really important. It's also looking at medication, because we know that polypharmacy increases the risk of falls if you're on four or more tablets. Assessing someone's cognition. We know if someone's living with dementia or if someone is delirious, it can increase your risk of falls. And it's being proactively looking for any reversible condition that's increasing someone's falls risk. And obviously examination's important, looking at the footwear, looking at walking aids, vision, hearing, all these things are required for a falls assessment. And we often can't do that on day one because the focus for our hip fracture patients are getting them to surgery, but it's part of the ongoing multidisciplinary assessment done by the whole team during the post-op recovery period.
I think I've asked every single question that I could think of. Thank you so much for explaining everything. in such an easy to understand way to fully get an understanding of what orthogeriatrics comprises of and how we should be effectively treating these patients. I don't know if there's anything final that you would like to share with our listeners, or if you feel that we've covered everything as well.
I suppose one of the things was, in terms of the emergence of orthogeriatrics, often the patients with fragility fractures, hip fractures in particular, a number of years ago, these most vulnerable patients were managed by the most junior member of the surgical team, and medical input was on an ad hoc basis, and involving the specialty of orthogeriatrics really developed as a result of that. And it's been shown that having an orthogeriatrician involved in the care of these patients helps to reduce length of stay. It reduces inpatient mortality and mortality at 1 year as well. And I think as a result of orthogeriatrics, it's helped to develop services in other specialties who are dealing with older, frailer patients, such as general surgery, vascular. So it's an expanding field.
Vidya, I guess there's nothing left for me other than to thank you so much for joining me today and for sharing all your knowledge with us. I'm sure the listeners will very much benefit from the episode today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
The TNMC sister podcast, Career Conversations, supports medical students and trainees with career guidance and progression, as well as professional development. We wish to recommend our Demystifying PACES podcast series on career conversations. As some of you may know, in late 2023, MRCP UK updated the PACES exam format, so we developed this new series to support PACES candidates. Episodes cover exam organisation, calibration, every PACES station including key changes, and candidate perspectives,